Well, folks, it's been a minute. Welcome, everyone, to the third episode of The Spin's third season, sneaking in just before the year's end. Today, Mark and I will discuss friendships at work and how some people even have best friends. Let's get into it.
So, Kristen, we have not recorded a podcast forever, and so this is our opportunity to remind ourselves how this all works, but we are back. The Spin is back just for maybe one episode before the end of 2022.
We fell off the tracks hard. I feel like we owe our very kind and interested audience, which tends to be somewhere around, 100 plus people who do download us over time. What the hell happened? You've got some accountability in this. You got a new ride called Ramsey, which took you off track for sure.
Yeah. So you think, so it's not that they need an apology. They actually need an explanation. Do you think?
They need an explanation. They deserve an explanation. So how did we fall off?
I think it's that kind of crazy thing called life kind of got in the way. And I think because this is one of those things that we enjoy doing, but it's, it didn't necessarily get as much prioritization as it should, but maybe using that as a bit of a check-in, if you like, or to get everyone updated on what we've been up to. Yeah, I can share a couple of my confession. Yeah. Around what I've been up to, but why don't you go first, and then I can see how much depth I need to give to my excuses.
Yeah, I think my excuse isn't as extravagant or as interesting as yours. I think life got in the way. I also think COVID did get in the way. We were physically doing these, and then I actually think you, not to give away health secrets, like I think you caught COVID one time, and we were supposed to do something, so that messed us up, and then. Once we missed that window, we had to create a new window, which probably got punted out a couple months. And so it was, if you just miss your groove a little bit, you can kind of fall off. I've been super busy with work. I've been super busy with like kids and family stuff. Like my daughter does cheer, which is...
Did she just win something in cheer?
She just came second in something.
Second, that's amazing.
Yeah, she's doing well. And then, and just like vacation time and summertime and trying to get to see people that you haven't seen for a long time. And I don't think it was anything fancy other than just trying to get back to a reality, which is still a little bit unsettled, but closer to the new normal. So yeah, I think it was just life. Yeah. And this stuff does get deprioritized. It's time and effort. And some thoughts, and sometimes you don't have much gas in the tank for some weeks.
I think they're all good reasons, but it's I'm just trying to remind myself when the last episode was, but I think it was actually sometime in, was it in March?
I think so. Like, I think it's when we put it together. It's brutal. Yeah. It's bad. Anyway, that was me. Yeah, you had more fun stuff to do.
Yeah, I was lucky that the kind of exciting news that I had in the year, which was, I think, the third or fourth of my midlife crises was getting an RV, which for every reason I did name Ramsey. Well, I named it Ramsey because it's a Ram van, so it kind of made sense, but I don't know why I named it. I think that's just kind of what you do with RVs, apparently.
He's a beaut. I've had many people say, wow, that thing looks amazing. So
yeah, it is a cool thing. So that kind of took up a fair bit of time. I'd like to say it took a fair bit of time kind of building it and stuff, but that was absolutely nothing to do with me. I had very talented people who did that instead, but I've spent some good time enjoying it and kind of fiddling around with it and faffing around with it. So that took time. So that took me off the grid, as it were, for a little while back in the summer. And then, I think it's a combination of COVID and life and stuff as well. But we're back. That's the most important thing. So, and I'm not sure we can commit to, let's avoid saying that we'll, what sort of commitment we'll make to future episodes. But it's always a pleasure
to
connect.
Let's just get like some momentum.
One every 9 months or something.
Yeah, even if we can do that, sure.
That's so counter to every bit of advice you get around how to do podcasts. So
it's agreed. Yeah, we are the antithesis of what you should be doing.
Today, we are going to talk about the topic of friendships at work, which was, I admit my idea, partly based on the fact that, again, I spend too much time thinking about certain things and probably at one stage realized that I didn't necessarily have as many friends as I thought I should. So I did do a bit of digging around this topic. And so, yeah, I thought it'd be interesting to kick it around for a bit. So maybe if I just tee up why I thought this was an interesting topic, then curious to get your perspective on it, because I think the impact of COVID and all of the different things that we've seen over the last couple of years with social isolation and those sorts of things, I think has created this opportunity just for us to think differently about friendships. And it got me thinking, as I say, about what was going on. So I was recommended a book called Billy No Mates. I don't know if there's Billy No Mates. Was that a phrase that you kind of have here?
I'm like, that's a phrase. That's not, well, it's kind of a clever title.
Yeah, you talk, it's the title of the book, but you'd often say to somebody if they didn't have any friends, you'd say, oh, you're a Billy No Mates.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard of it. There goes Mark. Yeah. He's a Billy No Mates.
Exactly. Yeah. I was reminded that I did, for whatever reason, I can't quite remember where I got it from, but at university, I did have a Billy No Mates t-shirt, which I think was my own cry for help when I was trying to make friends.
I like it. Perhaps. It's a good handle. I don't know the term, but I can wrap my head around it.
Yeah, it's not complex. It's not a complicated one. There's not many, too many layers to it. But anyway, there's a good book by a guy called Max Dickens called Billy No Mates, and he had this realization that he didn't have many friends when it came to looking to identify his best man and realizing that he didn't actually have a male friend he could ask. He had lots of female friends, and he goes into then a lot of detail about trying to, in a funny way, kind of describe how he dealt with that and the things he did to essentially realize that men in particular have problems finding friends. And as always with these things, you know, I like a statistic or two, and it was actually from Movember, the 2018 Movember Foundation survey, who reported that 1 in 3 men suggests that they don't have any close friends, which is pretty high. And that then obviously runs into people, you know, you think about obviously the impact of isolation and even the kind of tragedy of suicide and the fact that more men commit suicide than women, etc. So it becomes a pretty heavy subject quite quickly, which I thought was interesting.
Like heavy is the right word. I don't think it's super surprising, like without getting too philosophical, like I think men are not great at sharing their feelings typically. And so I'm not surprised they have a harder time than say women, if you will. But you referenced 1 in 3, but there's also another thing which you also shared, which was like that Scott Galloway graph, which was 1 in 7 men have no friends at all, or 1 in 10 women don't have friends at all. So it's like, that's significant. And I don't know the best way to even like go at how to remedy that, because a lot of like where I've got deep relationships and friends, like they're from a long time ago. It's hard to make newer ones. And I was trying to do some research. Seemingly the best place to make friends beyond high school and college is work. But work's been so kind of, at least for people that are like in the office who have gone hybrid, if you will, and more COVID impacted versus like those who work at a grocery store, as an example, who would have to go anyway. But like that's been kind of broken up as well. So you've got kind of this ongoing challenge. And then the last few years of people not having constant work arrangements to kind of see and make regular relationships, I can see why it becomes a bit more pronounced kind of now when well-being comes up, because people haven't had an easy go of laying that foundation anyway.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's regardless of your age in some ways, so I think there's a lot discussed about younger employees and how, you know, one of our favorite podcasters, Scott Galloway, often makes this point that when people aren't coming to the office, you know, young people go to an office to find their life partner and to find friends and all those sorts of things. But I think it extends kind of beyond that demographic in terms of friendships that can be created at work. So if you're not in the office on a regular basis, then it does strike me that it's going to be much harder to get that support network and develop those relationships. And that has an impact on, as we know, your effectiveness as a team and your cohesion and your belonging and all those sorts of things. But I think that also extends just into building those friendships as well. So it's definitely has an impact. And there's some Gallup, as you'll know, the Gallup in the Q12, they asked this question, have you got a best friend at work? And they've been tracking that number for the longest time since that survey was generated, you know, back in the day. And they've seen a decline in the number of people who say that they do have a best friend at work. So it's the impact of work on friendships, I think, is something that, in my view, organizations have a role in addressing. I think there's things that they can do to start to kind of build more of those connections. That's a question I'm curious on your, in your view, of whether you think as an organization, do they have responsibility for that, or is that them overstepping a boundary there potentially in terms of getting involved in those sorts of things?
I don't think it's for the organization to force people to become friends. I do think it is, you know, would be smart for the organization to create scenarios and situations where people can build friendship. So friendship in the work environment is kind of built off two key things. Like, one would be like tasks, like we do things together. Yeah. And then I can see you at your best, I can see you kind of at your worst, I can see you in the middle, and then that creates kind of a backdrop for us to have connection points, you know. So like, you went through this thing, I got to see you go through this thing if this was in person, and so now we've got a common piece that we can work on. So I think being in person helps do that kind of stuff better than virtual, for sure, because you can kind of just like through osmosis see someone's experience. And then, you know, again, like the company creating the backdrop to be able to do this, like having social scenarios and situations. Like, I've got a thing coming up next Friday, which is like our holiday party, and I'll get to see people in Toronto, and everyone's kind of going to go to that. And I think people, they're not all chattering about it, but I think people are looking forward to it because that's a social thing. So if the organization doesn't create those sorts of scenarios, then those things don't happen. So I do think it's about creating an environment where you can kind of have both shared experience / tasks, where you get to see people do their job and you get to kind of riff on it together, and then also kind of manufacturing social as well.
So you envisage kind of creating the situation, create the environment where people can make the connections if they want to, but it's not to kind of be like a dating agency and start to connect people more than that, is your thought?
Yeah, maybe one way to illustrate it a bit differently. Like, I went to this offsite, and what I didn't realize was how a collection of people were so close until you actually like saw them like hang out in an event and realize there was like a circle there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like you can make assumptions around doing Zooms or Teams or whatever and having these connections. And when you're done that meeting, you go to the next meeting. But if you're put into an environment, you can see where physical environment, you can see where people have either made those connections, which is interesting because that changes the dynamic of those Teams and Zoom calls. You start to realize where the actual, like the true network is, as opposed to like the meeting. So that was kind of an aha for me that I probably forgot about. But then also you get to build on that too.
Right. So in what way, when you say build on it?
Well, like, so if, you know, we went out to a setting and all of a sudden there's a group of people that like, you can tell they're close and they hang out that you never knew. And then they ask you, do you want to hang out? All of a sudden you can start to be part of that network and those friendships as well. Right. So you can start to, you know, build on other people's foundations and other people's work and effort.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, I mean, something I was thinking about was that I think you do need in an organization, you can create the opportunities for people to build friendships, but I think it does need something a bit more than that. Somebody to kind of provide the kind of encouragement or the nudge to build those relationships. And it feels like that's what was happening there. You're almost seeing it being role modeled by people, and that kind of encourages you to kind of step into it. So I think an organization does need to have a, not necessarily a philosophy, but just be able to demonstrate that they do think about friendship and relationships in a positive way that's going to encourage other people to do the same, perhaps.
I think it's having leadership appreciate and see the value in having non-work scenarios where people can connect. That's an example of a very specific organizational instrument, if you will, to create connection, which is not really a work deliverable.
Yeah. Because I think if there is that stickiness, I mean, Gallup have done the research that shows that having that connection with somebody, that best friend, brings benefits beyond engagement. They talk about productivity and safety and less absence days and all those sorts of things. But I think, and there's other research I've seen from Microsoft, because they've done a lot of analysis around the whole return to office thing, and people are much more likely to want to come back into the office if they've got those opportunities to connect with their friends. Yeah, they want to connect with the people that they like. So I think there are a whole range of other benefits which are worth organizations going after. I guess my sense is that I don't think many organizations see their role in doing that. I think they may be, it happens more by chance rather than perhaps doing things more proactively, which are going to encourage that even more, which feels like the right thing to do. And, you know, I'm always a bit obsessed with doing the right thing, but maybe more importantly, I think there are commercial benefits to doing it as well, which perhaps will be more compelling for them.
Yeah. And sometimes those commercial benefits aren't necessarily right in front of your face, because it's not sending that email or doing, it's reevaluating kind of how you define productive relationships at work. Is it like having the meeting to get to the outcome, to move the proverbial ball down the field, to get to the next kind of, you know, business output, whether that's to book the next meeting, to talk to the next client, to have the next kind of like step in the sales cycle? Or is it like, that stuff will come if we just create an environment where people can talk and I'm not like micromanaging what they're actually like pumping out in productivity by like count of emails or count of phone calls or count of interactions. But it's a different way to see the world. I think the world is a bit more there, a bit more like that today than it would be probably pre-pandemic. But let me ask you, do you think across your journey in your career, you've had a best friend? I don't think I have, but have you?
I feel upset now that you'd not identify me in that category. But I think it's kind of relative. I think it's kind of a best friend at work. Do you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I have, but whether they would pass the whatever the test is of being a best friend, because I think it's kind of relative. It's the person, in my mind, it was always the person that I would go to in the organization that I was in, even if, you know, frankly, it was not somebody I'd necessarily want to hang out with outside of work. But it's, so that's how it was, like the best of a bad bunch almost.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. That's what it sounds like you're saying. It's like the best option out of bad options.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Which sounds terrible. That doesn't sound like you had a best friend. Yeah,
those people know
it
who
sounds
they
like
are.
You had like a life jacket. Yeah. And it's like a sea while you're drowning.
But I think there's still value in those relationships. Maybe more value for me than there was for them, perhaps. But I think there's still value. It's funny, I don't really know what a best friend really means. And like, do you need to have a best friend? It seems, I mean, even just asking that question almost sounds a bit school childish and a bit childish, which doesn't necessarily need to. But I was speaking to a coaching client the other day, and she had... you kind of ask people to talk about their leadership journey and the people who've had most influence them as part of a influence over them as part of an introduction to the conversation. And she'd had a best friend since she was 3 years old, and it was still her best friend now. And they'd lived next to each other. They're originally neighbors, and then they'd kind of grown up together, and they'd been through all these life experiences together. And this woman's best friend was literally just moving to the US, and understandably this woman was devastated that she was losing her best friend, and they drove down there together, and then she came back on her own. It was, I said to her, oh my God, this is like Thelma and Louise. And she reminded me that the ending was much more positive than Thelma and Louise. And I was like, oh yeah, shit, I forgot the
girl's
ending.
Girl's flying off a cliff holding
her. But anyway, I think it's, I mean, that struck me as being like a true best friend. I'm like, I don't think I've ever had a friend like that. That was, I found that quite incredible. So.
I think I've shared it before. I've got like a variety of friends who I've known for a long time. I'm not going to characterize them all as best friends. I had a lot of good friends. But what I think,
showing off now, aren't you?
yeah, it's just one big friendship flex. But when I think about like work best friends, I don't know the best way to say it, but like I guess a good work friend, probably a better way to think about it. Part that I get stuck on is like trust, right? Like typically that friend, that Thelma and Louise friend who they know when they were like 3 years old, like anything either of them would say to each other would be like fair game, I assume. Where in the context of business, there's a chance that it could get used as leverage or opportunistically by somebody. So like if you said something in trust about your boss, and that person who's your friend now reports to that person, they could use that as ammunition to then potentially like jam you up on the interview that you're going to go for the same job. Like I like blind trust is different than work trust. And that's the part that I think, that's why I'm close to many people, I think, at work, but I always wonder in the back of my head, like, could this relationship and what I've shared ever jam me up in any way? And it's possible it could. It's possible I'd have nothing to worry about, but I wouldn't think about that the same as like outside of work friends. It would just be a thing you talk about.
And is that just the nature of those friendships? You never had kind of had the time with people, or is it the fact that it's in a work context?
I think it's like in a work context, you hope that everyone has your best interest in mind, but it's a long game, if you will. If you use Simon Sinek's like infinite game, and like there isn't like a beginning and end, it just kind of goes on and on and on. And I feel like conversations can be currency, and currency in an organization can like serve you well or work against you depending on how people choose to use it. So that's the part that I get a bit kind of nervous about. I'm not saying I really change my style much. If I said to you, Mark, right, like, this is my most transparent, honest thought, and you're like, okay, cool, I agree, I disagree, I don't know why I thought that, that's your problem, moving on. If I say that at work, all of a sudden it's a completely different like arena.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Yeah, maybe it's just the if you kind of friendships outside of the context of work are probably more straightforward, aren't they? And yeah. So maybe the level of friendship is never going to, maybe it's not realistic to think about having a best friend in work couldn't be the same depth of relationship as a best friend outside of work. So it's back to the point of, but at least you've got somebody who you can refer to, which I guess if you think about the Gallup data, lots of people, because they don't really define what they mean by a best friend in Gallup, interestingly, but people's interpretation of that is that not many people do have a best friend, and it's lower than it was a couple of years ago. So it's kind of getting a trend, a downward trend rather than upward trend. And maybe that's where the focus should be in terms of work context. And there's a role that organizations can play. I think outside of work, back to your point around, particularly with men not necessarily always kind of sharing their feelings, maybe there is more that we can do to create more friendships outside of work as well. And I think that's something that we have to take a bit more responsibility for ourselves. I don't think that can be left. Nobody else is going to worry about us having friends than ourselves, I don't think.
Except for us two here talking about it.
Yeah. It's going to differ from person to person, isn't it?
There's person to person, but then there's also like reporting relationships or like partnerships in the business, right? Like if I have someone reporting to me and they have a very keen interest in me, that could be because they do. It could be because they think it's useful for their career to make that relationship. And then, so like, and that's a two-way street, right? It could be like if you're someone's leader and you're like, you're talking like to that direct, if you will, they may like, does my leader only care about me now because it serves them? Would they care about me 5 years from now when like I don't report to them? Would they still be a mentor? So maybe I'm just more cautious around in like the incentive / intention of people, but I always try to give people the benefit of the doubt. But there is more skin in the game and more opportunity to have things go well for you based on a relationship, or potentially harm you in a work environment, as opposed to just kind of off the street.
As a leader, have you ever been in a situation where kind of the friendships at work has become, I don't know, kind of caused any issues for you particularly in terms of the approach that you've taken as a leader?
I think when you're a leader, you can say something and in the right context, people can hear every word and it makes a lot of sense. In the wrong context, they can hear kind of what they want to hear, or they tie it to their narrative.
I think if you're a leader and there's people in your team that for whatever reason you have more in common with or more of a connection with, and that's definitely leaves yourself open to having favorites and some of those challenges. And then when you potentially do, also the obvious thing of when you do then have a challenging decision to make with that person, or you know, they don't get the promotion that they wanted, it does present challenges. So as a leader, I can't help but make connections with people, and that's kind of part of the way I lead. But it does come with an acknowledgement that there are some risks associated with that. So, you know, as you know, I used to have, you know, people would come around, my team would come here for a holiday event every year for a while, kind of pre-COVID. And that, you know, that means that you're opening up your house to people in a different way, and that can create different connections and stuff. I think as long as you're doing it in a very conscious way and being aware that people's perceptions around those things can sometimes change. So, I've spoken to leaders in the past and they'd be like, there's no way in which I'm overstepping whatever that kind of line is of maintaining a formal relationship with my direct reports. And I never really subscribed to that school of thought. So it's interesting.
I never got to go to one of those parties, by the way.
No, you did. Well, you stopped doing
that. They were well before my time.
And you had never had enough beer in my house. So I stopped doing them when you were.
Lock the doors. Yeah. He's here.
I'm one of those butchers in the house. So yeah, friendships. I think friendships at work specifically, I think that's what we've discussed. But my view is that there's a role that organizations can play in helping to facilitate that. It sounds like you agree, but at the same time, recognize that there are some implications of that need to be kept in mind for sure. But I think it's important, particularly as people do feel isolated and feel they don't have a connection to the organization. It's another way of creating that belonging, which us HR people talk about on occasion. So
I don't think it's ever been more important than it is now. So I think it's a good call out.
We used to do this thing called high, low, end of the show. Curious whether you have a high, a low, an end of the show, Mr. Butcher.
I do. I have a few because I'm making up for lost time.
Oh. You have one from April. Your high from April was X.
Yeah, I've been stacking them up. My high would be some version of this combination. So I'm speaking of friends. I'm going to spend the next 2 days with one of my very good friends to just write and record music to charge my batteries.
Nice.
So that's a thing that I'm doing. That's someone I've known since grade, I'm going to say 7, whatever that is in Canada, because you wouldn't know. I think that's like 10 years old.
Yeah. It was, this is a he, isn't it?
I'm thinking. This is a he, yeah.
Were you always into music together since?
Yeah, this is someone I would have like played with in a band, and like we would have like learned to play instruments together and stuff. And back to like what makes people friends. Typically, there's some level of like commonalities and values and enjoying certain activities and musical taste and all that kind of stuff. So I got that coming up, which is cool. And then on top, raised about $1,600 with myself and some colleagues from work for Movember for men's health. So we're talking a bit about men's health stuff here, and in particular around friendships, but that is useful to contribute. And I think it'll be probably about like $3,500 I probably raised in the last 5 years or so, which
is
cool.
That's been great. Are they colleagues from work or friends from work?
They're friends from work. That's a true question. My low, I went to Montreal a week ago and I came back, and I don't know if I was sick when I went there or I came back, but I've been sick for about a week, like 7 days. Today's the first day I've had any energy. So it's gone through my whole house, and it's not COVID. I did do the test, but it's getting sick sucks, and you forget because you haven't done it for so long, really. I mean, I haven't had COVID personally. I'm one of the few people that haven't. So like I've gone 2.5-3 years without really anything coming through, and it knocked the hell out of me. So that was my low. And my end of the show would be, we started off talking about podcasts. There's one on Spotify, which is called Quiet Part Loud. It's a Gimlet show, and it is weird. It's this very sensory audio experience. I won't even get into the narrative, but it's a lot to kind of consume, and I haven't experienced anything like it as a story podcast. So it's been pretty cool. I think I'll write it out. Obviously, we'll link to it. But yeah, Quiet Part Loud, if on Spotify and into, like, I haven't experienced anything like it.
I'm not really, what is it? Or do I need to go listen to it to really get a sense of what it is?
It is like,
it sounds like I'm listening to whale music to make me go to sleep.
But no, it is a podcast that is based around an old like shock jock radio DJ. And then it goes forwards and backwards in time. And it's about like 3 Muslim kids who disappear, and how it was around the time of 9/11, and he ends up sending anthrax to himself while he's in the radio show, and he loses his job, and his life's falling apart, with his wife and his daughter. And so it throws between like being in a bar, being in his old job, doing old like shock jock clips. Like, you can't, because there's no visual to cue you to what has changed, right? Like, in the backdrop there's a radio studio. In the backdrop, he's in a bar. There's none of that. So you get all the cues audibly.
Oh,
so it's a completely different way to consume a story. And I've just never experienced anything like it.
Hmm.
So how about you? What do you have stacked up over the last few months?
Yeah, well, not necessarily the last few months per se, but I think that's a good way of thinking about it. But I think my high is that the World Cup is on at the moment.
I've watched a ton of matches.
Have you?
Yeah, like way more than I would have expected. I probably watched 10 full games at this point.
Oh, wow. That's probably more than me. Yeah, I guess as much an England fan, but also it's cool to see Canada have a go as well. So, mm-hmm. So it's good to see that, albeit in a tricky situation with all of the strangeness that is Qatar and all the human rights issues that are going on there. But the World Cup itself as a spectacle, I think, is interesting to see. I think my low, and we kind of debated this a little bit off air, if that is a thing, is just watching all the shenanigans that are going on at Twitter. And whilst that's starting to come to an end, I was thinking about that from the context of how badly that role models leadership for people. And what specifically got me worried was whether other likely white male leaders will look at what Elon Musk has done and think, oh, I wish I could do that without having any care in the world about what the impact will be on people, and
a kind of a license to be an asshole sort of.
Yeah. So whether they're feeling a bit kind of jealous about that, but whether it actually does then drive some of that bad behavior, because they think, well, he's getting away with it, so maybe I'll get away with it. So there's this term, I can't remember where I stole it from, but rather than being assholes, they're boss holes, which I thought was funny. So yeah, so that was a bit of a low, I think, just the way that that plays out. I don't hear enough positive stories of great leadership to counter some of that negative narrative. And then my end of the show, I'll probably go back to my kind of friends at work thing, and I will do a shout out for the book Billy No Mates by Max Diggins, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes because it's definitely worth a read. So that's where I'll go with my my end of show.
I want a picture of you in your t-shirt when you were at uni with your shirt that said Billy No Mates on it. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, I'll see.
On your poor leadership though, there has been some really good examples recently, like Stripe just let go a bunch of people, and it was apparently a masterclass in how to be empathetic. And then DoorDash just did a bunch. So okay. I think there are some examples.
Yeah, I saw the Stripe one. I think it's a good shout. I think even there was people were talking about how the way that Meta did some of their layoffs were done much more effectively than the way Musk did. But yeah, so I think that's a good shout. There are positive stories out there. But again, I still think there is this kind of pent up demand for this kind of very macho style of management that I think to a certain extent we've been able to suppress. But I think there's still embers there, and I worry that he's going to create, and I'm getting all my metaphors mixed up here, but he's going to create some fuel to generate some energy beneath that, I wonder, which I don't think would be a good thing. So we need more of those stories. The stories are the fire blanket to those embers.
the thoughtful ways to terminate mass amounts of people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. A sign anyway, of things to come. Anyway.
Kristen, it's been a pleasure. Let's not leave it 9 months next time.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark, for your time. And I look forward to learning more about Billy No Mates.
Thanks, Kristen. See you soon.
And there you have it, folks. Season 3, Episode 3 in the books. Hopefully you enjoyed hearing Mark and I discuss friendships at work. As always, we look forward to any of your feedback on Apple Podcasts or any other players you listen to. Happy holidays. Be safe. We'll talk to you more frequently in the new year.